yourself through the eyes of someone who admires you. They get it. They believe in you leaps and bounds. They aren't connected to your insecurities and negative beliefs about yourself. All they see is your true glory and potential. Become one of your own diehard fans, look at yourself from the outside, where all your self-doubts can't crawl all over you, and behold what shines through. You get to choose how you perceive your reality. So why, when it comes to perceiving yourself, would you choose to see anything other than a super huge rock star of a creature? You are a badass. You were one when you came screaming onto this planet, and you are one now. The universe wouldn't have bothered with you otherwise. You can't screw up so majorly that your badassery disappears. It is who you are. It's who you always will be. It's not up for negotiation. You are loved, massively, ferociously, unconditionally. The universe is totally freaking out about how awesome you are. It's got you wrapped in a warm gorilla hug of adoration. It wants to give you everything you desire. It wants you to be happy. It wants you to see what it sees in you. You are perfect. To think anything less is as pointless as a river thinking that it's got too many curves, or that it moves too slowly, or that its rapids are too rapid. Says who? You're on a journey with no defined beginning, middle, or end. There are no wrong twists and turns. There is just being. And your job is to be as you can be. This is why you're here. To shy away from who you truly are would leave the world you-less. You are the only you there is. And you are the only you that ever will be. I repeat, you are the only you there is, and you are the only you that ever will be. Do not deny the world its one and only chance to bask in your brilliance. We are all perfect in our own magnificent, fucked up ways. Laugh at yourself, love yourself and others, rejoice in the cosmic ridiculousness. Part 2, How to Embrace Your Inner Badass. Chapter 6, Love the One You Is. If we really love ourselves, everything in our life works. Louise Hay, author, publisher, the godmother of self-help, who was doing it way back when it still wasn't cool. I was hanging out at my brother Bobby's house one day, lying on the couch, watching his then 2-year-old son waddle around. At one point, someone knocked something off the coffee table, and my little nephew bent down to pick it up. Bobby turned to me and said, "Did you see that? The guy knows exactly how it's done. He bends at the knees, keeps his back straight, hips squared, stomach tight, flawless." Thrilled to have such a willing and skilled Exhibit A, Bobby then proceeded to spend the next couple of minutes dropping more things on the floor. A spoon, a TV remote, an empty can of beer. And my nephew, in perfect form, continued to pick it all up as my brother kept up a running commentary on his posture, muscle usage, seriousness of manner, and the fact that my nephew was pulling it all off with great dignity, even though his diaper was sagging. "It's incredible. The kid could flip over a car without straining his back. I can barely pull up my pants without having to be rushed to the hospital." When we're born, we have an instinctual understanding of some of the most important basics of life that includes and goes way beyond bending at our knees instead of our lower backs to pick a beer can up off the floor. We're born knowing how to trust our instincts, how to breathe deeply, how to eat only when we're hungry, how to not care about what anyone else thinks of our singing voices, dance moves, or hairdos. We know how to play, create, and love without holding back. Then, as we grow and learn from the people around us, we replace many of these primal understandings with negative false beliefs, fear, shame, and self-doubt. Then we wind up in emotional and physical pain. Then we either numb our pain with drugs, sex, booze, TV, Cheetos, etc., or we settle for mediocrity. Or we rise to the occasion, remember how truly mighty we are, and we set out to relearn everything we knew at the beginning all over again. It's like we're born with a big bag of money, more than enough to fund any dream of ours. And instead of following our instincts and our hearts, we invest in what other people believe we should invest in. Some people invest in believing they're too old to go out clubbing, when they love nothing more than the boogie. Some invest in being tough and too cool for school, when all they want is love and connection. Some invest in being ashamed of their sexuality, instead of being their gloriously gay selves. As we continue to buy into these things that aren't even true for us, our inner fortunes dwindle away, and it isn't until we reconnect with who we truly are and start investing in what's true for us that we start to live rich, full, authentic lives. And while there are countless ways that we rip ourselves off, there's one way in particular that is, without a doubt, the most rampant and the most devastating of all. We invest everything we've got in believing that we're not good enough. We arrive here as perfect little bundles of joy and then set about the task of learning to unlove ourselves. How unbelievably ridiculous is that? Self-love, the simplest yet most powerful thing ever, flies right out the window when we start taking in outside information. I'm not talking about conceit or narcissism, because those things also come from fear and lack of self-love. I'm talking about a deep connection with our highest selves and an unshakable ability to forgive our lowest. I'm talking about loving ourselves enough to let go of guilt, resentment, and criticism and embrace compassion, joy, and gratitude. When we're happy and all in love with ourselves, we can't be bothered with the bullshit, our own or other people's. Imagine what our world would be like if everyone loved themselves so much that they weren't threatened by other people's opinions or skin colors or sexual preferences or talents or education or possessions or lack of possessions or religious beliefs or customs or their general tendency to just be whoever the hell they are. Imagine how different your reality would be and the reality of everyone surrounding you if you woke up every morning certain of your own lovability and your critically important role on this planet. And if you poo-pooed shame, guilt, self-doubt, and self-loathing and allowed yourself to be, do, and have everything your little heart desired. That's the kind of world I want to live in. In the interest of perpetuating such radical, reality-altering self-love, here are some of the best ways to win yourself over again. 1. Appreciate how special you are. There will never be anyone exactly like you. You were given special gifts and talents to share with the world, and even though everyone has special gifts and talents, nobody will use theirs quite the same way you do. You have a way of being in the world and a perspective that's unique to you. You are the only one who thinks your thoughts the way you think them. You have created your own unique reality and are living your life according to your own unique path. You are the only you that will ever be. You are kind of a big deal. 2. Drown yourself in affirmations. Trust me, I wouldn't do this to you unless I had to, but affirmations work. You don't have to say them in the mirror. You don't have to hug yourself or buy a special rainbow journal with a lock on it to write them down in. But if you want to turn the ship around, you need to rewire your brain and train it to think differently. And this is what affirmations can do for you. Figure out which affirmations you need to hear the most and repeat them all day long. In your head, in the car, while you're walking down the street pretending to be on the phone, under your breath in line at the supermarket. Write them on post-it notes and stick them around your house, on your mirrors, in your refrigerator, in your car. Write down your favorite affirmation 10 times every morning and 10 times every night before you go to bed and say them out loud. Here are some affirmations specific to self-love. Pick one or two that work for you and pummel yourself with them. I deserve and receive massive amounts of love every moment of every day. I am one with the universe. The universe is awesome, and so am I. My heart is open. Love pours in and out. I receive all the good that life has to offer me. I am brilliant, bright, and beautiful. I love how tall I am, and I love the size of my ass. Or, you know, whatever. If none of these work for you, come up with some that don't make you gag, but that still strike a nerve with you. The more emotion you feel around what you're saying, the more power it will have to bring about positive change. And yes, at the beginning, it may feel like you're lying to yourself, but the truth is, you're living the lie, so the affirmations get you back to truth. This can't just be rattling off nonsense. You have to feel it and want it and get worked up by it in order for it to work. 3. Do things you love. When you constantly deny yourself the people, food, things, and experiences that make you feel the most alive, that sends a pretty lousy message home. Look at your life and see where you're letting yourself down. If you hear yourself saying things like, "I love going out to see live music. I can't remember the last time I did it." Make time. We're all busy, but it's the people who make enjoying their lives a priority who, enjoy their lives. Right now, there are thousands of people all over the world at yoga retreats overlooking the ocean, dancing their asses off at outdoor music festivals, or whooping it up on the Disney cruise of their dreams. Really listen to how you speak and pay attention to what you do, and make a conscious effort to increase your joy in whatever capacity you can. It can be anything from spending a weekday afternoon with a great friend, to quitting your hateful job, to buying a pair of completely impractical but completely awesome new shoes, to going on a surf vacation in Costa Rica. It's about being proactive about creating the life you love instead of meekly living out the one you're pretending you're stuck with. Give yourself the gift of a joyous life while you're still among the living. Also, if you're the kind of person who puts everyone else's needs first, start putting yours up front. Those who are used to you being their personal assistant will still love you, even though they'll be somewhat grouchy about you not waiting on them hand and foot anymore. Buy a new pair of jeans. Open a savings account. Hire someone to do your dishes. Make your kids clean out the cat box. You aren't a selfish person for taking care of yourself, just a happier one. Take care of yourself as if you're the most awesome person you've ever met. 4. Find a replacement. We've gotten so used to our negative knee-jerk reactions to ourselves that we never think to question them. We simply take them as a truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But once we become aware of our thought patterns and behaviors, we can consciously change them. So start paying attention. What runs through your mind when you look in the mirror? What happens inside you when you see someone totally succeeding at something you'd love to do but have never let yourself try? What do you think and feel when you walk up to a group of really good-looking, successful people? Or when you try your best to pull something off and you fail? Or when you get dumped by someone who is totally awesome and hot? Or when you walk around all day with your fly open? Or when you leave your coffee on the roof of your car and drive off? Or when you let a friend down? Or when you stub your toe on the kitchen table for the 10th time? Or when you forget your dad's birthday? Or when you snap at someone who didn't quite deserve it as harshly as you gave it to them? Notice the verbiage that runs through your mind when you're being the most heinous to yourself and come up with a new and improved response. For example, if every time you look in the mirror, your first thought is, "Yikes!" Make a conscious effort to change it to, "Hi, gorgeous." If you have a complicated relationship with your father and beat yourself up every time you say something awful to him, replace thoughts like, "I'm a monster," with, "I'm just a little bunny working through my issues." And then, of course, apologize to him. If your standard response to screwing something up is, "Ugh, her royal clumsiness strikes again," replace it with, "What can I learn from this?" The most important thing is to free yourself from the drama and the conviction that your current version of yourself is the truth. I don't care if you're all, "That's easy for you to say. You don't have a nose that makes it look like someone parked a yacht on your face." Because one day you could see some fancy and famous fashion model with a nose far bigger than yours who decided she was gorgeous anyway. And suddenly, you'll feel beautiful and confident and all proud of your nose when, just the day before, you were considering getting it sawed off. This is how ridiculous we are. Do not spend your life clinging to the insulting decisions you've made about yourself. Instead, make the conscious choice to replace them with new and improved ones. 5. Ditch the self-deprecating humor. Incessant self-deprecating humor is for losers. I get it. It can be hilariously funny, and I'm totally guilty of it from time to time. And there's nobody I'd more enjoy backing over with my car than the guy who can't laugh at himself. But I'm talking about the nonstop, self-flagellating, I suck fest. Ripping on yourself gets old, fast, especially if it's your shtick. So if you're one of those people who falls back on making fun of yourself every hour on the hour, not only are you basically begging people to think you're a loser, but you're begging yourself to think you're a loser. It's like hitting yourself over and over with a crowbar. Why on earth would you do that to your awesome self? What you tell yourself on a daily basis is more powerful than you know. Seemingly harmless jokes, over time, turn into seriously destructive beliefs. Our thoughts become our words become our beliefs become our actions become our habits become our realities. So if your favorite joke is that you couldn't get a date if you demanded one at gunpoint, and you spend every Saturday night alone, perhaps you should come up with a new one-liner. And most importantly, constantly making fun of yourself is such a cheap way to be funny. Anyone can do it. So push yourself to come up with a new script. Your confidence and we humor snobs will thank you. 6. Let the love in. Receive compliments gracefully, instead of countering with a disclaimer such as, "Oh, this ratty old thing?" Try this instead. "Thank you. Period." Take care of your body, too. We, if you're anything like me, run around doing all our busy work with our poor bodies flapping behind us like old wind socks. When we're pressed for time, it's often the first thing to get overlooked. I've got 5 meetings today. I'll do my yoga tomorrow and have a power bar for lunch. Meanwhile, during our little sojourn here on Earth, we need our bodies more than they need us. Say nice things about your body. Dress it up and take it out. Give it hot sex, luxurious baths, and massages. Move it, stretch it, nourish it, hydrate it, pay attention to it. The better our bodies feel, the happier and more productive we are. 7. Don't compare yourself to others. Have you ever done something that you're so proud of and feel all on top of the world about until you see that someone else has done something similar that, in your mind, is better, and all of a sudden, you feel sad? Comparison is the fastest way to take all the fun out of life. It's none of your business what other people are doing. All that matters is that you're enjoying yourself and pleased with what you're creating. It's precisely your uniqueness that makes you awesome. Deciding that someone else's uniqueness is better than your own isn't exactly being your own best buddy about things. Can you imagine what our world would be like if our biggest heroes succumbed to the perils of comparison? If Marilyn Monroe compared herself to Kate Moss and decided she needed to lose her curves? Or if the guys in Led Zeppelin compared themselves to Mozart? Dude, that guy's huge. Way huger than we'll ever be. And he doesn't even have a drummer. I think we should get rid of ours and maybe add some harps while we're at it. You are more than enough. Avoid comparison like the plague. 8. Forgive yourself. Listen up. This one's extremely important. You have screwed up in the past. You will screw up again. Every human is born with the ability to make spectacular mistakes. You are not alone. Screwing up is not your special skill. Get over it. Dragging around guilt and self-criticism is beyond unhealthy and is utterly pointless, not to mention boring. You aren't a better person for feeling guilty or bad about yourself, just a sadder one. Get clear on this one truth. Guilt, shame, and self-criticism are some of the most destructive forces in your life, which is why forgiving yourself is one of the most powerful. Here's an excellent way to do it. Think of a specific thing that you did that you feel badly about. Call it up in your mind and feel it in your body. Repeat the following over and over while thinking of it and really feel what you're saying to yourself. Holding on to my bad feelings about this is doing nothing but harming me and everyone else and preventing me from enjoying my life fully. I am an awesome person. I choose to enjoy my life. I choose to let this go. Repeat this until you feel a sense of freedom and lightness around your issue. It may take a day or a week or several months, or it could happen right away. But however long it takes, do it. Because if you want to be free, you have to put in the time. And if you need to apologize to someone, pick up the phone. Listen to Chapter 15 for more tips on forgiveness and letting go. 9. Love yourself, because it's the holy grail of happiness. Chapter 7. I know you are, but what am I? I'm not offended by all the dumb blonde jokes because I know I'm not dumb. I also know I'm not blonde. Dolly Parton. Singer, songwriter, actress, altruist, businesswoman, bright shiny light. A friend of mine, a brilliant writer, once called me in a panic when she suddenly became frozen with fear over the subject matter of the book she was working on and could no longer bring herself to write it. Her book was, among many other splendid things, very personal, dark, and twisted, and my friend was concerned that it was too much, that it was crossing the line, that she was exposing herself as a giant, weirdo, pervert freak. This brings up something that's so important to have a firm grasp on if you're going to get anywhere near reaching your full potential in this life as a writer, an artist, a business person, a parent, a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, or as a fully realized and evolved human being in general. Do not waste your precious time giving one single crap about what anybody else thinks of you. Imagine how liberating that would be. Other people's opinions motivate every move we make in our teens and our 20s. And as we age, if we're moving in the right direction, our obsession with how we're perceived by others begins to trickle away. But very few of us are able to escape its pointless grasp completely. Meanwhile, the truth is, the only questions you ever need to consider when making decisions about your life are: 1. Is this something I want to be, do, or have? 2. Is this going to take me in the direction I want to go, not should go? 3. Is this going to screw over anybody else in the process? The definition of screwing someone over is taking their money and doing a lousy job, or destroying their water source, or enslaving populations, things like that. Your mother being disappointed, or your father disapproving, or your friends being outraged does not qualify as screwing someone over. We throw a wet blanket of ho-hummery over our lives when we live in fear of what others might think instead of in celebration of who we are. Yes, it's part of our survival instinct to care. Get booted from the tribe and you'll freeze to death or starve or be eaten by wolves. But because we have big brains and the ability to manifest anything we set our minds to, there is another version that's equally plausible. Get booted from the tribe and start, or find, another tribe that's more your style. You could not only wind up doing what you love, surrounded by people you adore, who you actually relate to, but you might one day realize you can no longer remember the names of the people whose approval you so desperately thought you would die without. Nobody who ever accomplished anything big or new or worth raising a celebratory fist in the air did it from their comfort zone. They risked ridicule and failure and sometimes even death. Think of the Wright brothers. Can you imagine how that whole thing went down? Margaret, did you hear about poor Susan? Ruth, Susan Wright? Helen, such a disgrace. Poor thing. Ruth, what happened? Margaret, well, her sons. Helen, as if she hasn't suffered enough already, birthing two boys as big as buffaloes, and now this. Margaret, seems her two sons. Helen, you gonna eat the rest of your tapioca pudding? Mind if I help myself? Ruth, tell me already, Margaret. Margaret, well, this is gonna sound as crazy as it is, but they... Helen, and now her sons think they can fly. Such a shame. Margaret, her sons think, they think they can fly. Ruth, think they can fly? Margaret, yes, they think they can fly. They talk of nothing else. Helen, she just had the house painted too. They'll probably have to move out of town now. Once you step away from the herd and let your true self shine, you'll probably find yourself in front of the opinion firing squad, especially if you want to do as extraordinary and outside of everyone's comfort zones, which is why so many people run screaming from the lives they'd so love to live. Merely allowing yourself to be seen is a risk. I mean, look at how we treat celebrities. Their every move is picked apart and passed around and discussed and judged and photographed without makeup on. It's a wonder that only half of them spend time in rehab. You are responsible for what you say and do. You are not responsible for whether or not people freak out about it. Two people can walk out of the same movie, one person clinging to the walls, bloodshot and devastated, leaving a trail of tissues, more moved by this film than any other film in the history of cinema, while the other person goes marching up to the ticket counter and demands her money back because she thought it was the worst piece of garbage to ever be projected onto a screen. One movie, two very different experiences. Why? Because it's not about the movie, it's about the moviegoers. What other people think about you has nothing to do with you and everything to do with them. The trick is to not only deny the criticism any power over you, but even more challenging, to not get caught up in the praise. There's nothing wrong with blushingly accepting a compliment, but if you find yourself always seeking outside approval that you're good enough or cool enough or talented enough or worthy enough, you're screwed. Because if you base your self-worth on what everyone else thinks of you, you hand all your power over to other people and become dependent on a source outside of yourself for validation. Then you wind up chasing after something you have no control over, And should that something suddenly place its focus somewhere else, or change its mind and decide you're no longer very interesting, you end up with a full-blown identity crisis. All that matters is what's true for you, and if you can stay connected to that without straying, you will be a mighty superhero. Everything else is just other people's perception of reality, and that is none of your business. So how can you truly not care what other people think and be your most powerful self? 1. Ask yourself why. Why are you about to do or say something? Is it to be liked? To put someone down because you feel insecure? To get someone back because they made a fat joke about your mother? Or is it coming from a place of strength and truth? Are you doing it because it'll be fun? Because you feel called to do it? Because it'll change someone else's life in a positive, martyr-free way? Pay attention to your motivations and be honest. Practice coming from a place of integrity and you will be victorious. 2. Always do your best. There's no faster way to fall prey to outside input than when you're feeling insecure. And there's no better way to feel insecure than knowing you half-ass something or don't really believe in what you're doing. No matter what it is, raising your prices or raising your children, if you do the absolute best you possibly can and come from a place of integrity, then you can be proud of yourself and not give a damn what anyone else thinks. 3. Trust your intuition. Birds use their intuition to navigate their way to breeding grounds halfway around the world. Deer and rabbits and other prey-type beasts use their intuition to avoid running into predators. The average human, on the other hand, will take the advice of their drunk-before-noon neighbor across the street instead of doing what deep down we know is best. How many times have you thought in hindsight, "I knew I should have listened to my gut"? You have an incredible inner guidance tool that you can use whenever you need it. Tell everyone to shut up and go away. Get quiet, give yourself room to feel and think. You have all the answers inside of you. Practice sharpening your intuition, take the time to strengthen your connection to source energy, and trust that you know what's best for you. The more centered and tuned in you are, the mightier you will be. Listen for more tips on how to do this later in the book. 4. Find a temporary role model. Find a mentor or a hero or a role model. Get clear on why this person is impressive and inspiring to you, and when faced with a challenge that leaves you guessing how to react, ask yourself, "What would my hero do?" Not caring what others think is a muscle that can take some time to build up, so use this trick while you're still getting strong, and before you know it, you'll be able to ditch your hero and start asking yourself, "What would I do?" 5. Love yourself, no matter what anyone else thinks. Important note about outside opinions. While you are unauthorized to base your self-worth on what other people think, it doesn't mean you should miss out on the opportunity to benefit from outside input altogether, especially input from those who know you well. There is such a thing as constructive criticism and constructive complimenting, but whether or not they are constructive depends on you. For example, if people have been telling you for years that you're a hothead, that they feel they can't be open with you because the second you disagree with them, you blow up in their faces, ask yourself, "Is this true?" Be honest. Can I use this information to better myself and the lives of others? If the answer is yes, commit to making the necessary changes. If the answer is no, let it go. Same goes for compliments. If people constantly tell you that you're a good listener, ask yourself, "Is this compliment true for me? Can I use this information to better myself and the lives of others?" Again, if the answer is yes, figure out how you can capitalize on it. If the answer is no, let it go. Sometimes it's easier for other people to see what we can't see ourselves. So if they can help us connect with our truths and live happier, more authentic lives, then it's worth taking the time to listen. It still ultimately comes down to what's true for you, however. So the more connected to your inner truth you are, the easier it'll be to use outside opinions to your advantage, rather than let them rule your life. Chapter 8. What are you doing here? The big question is whether you're going to be able to say a hearty yes to your adventure. Joseph Campbell, American mythologist and author whose books and ideas influenced the making of Star Wars. Getting clear about what your unique purpose is can be the difference between living a happy, fulfilled life of abundance, choice, and expansiveness, or living in the restrictive veal pen of your own indecision and tired old excuses. A gift, of course, is meant to be given, which is why it's so brutal when we can't figure out what ours is, or when we know what it is, but we're too lame to act on it. Here we have the perfect gift to share with the world, just bursting to be opened, and we keep it sitting there, wrapped tightly in a box, growing old and gathering dust. Oh, the waste, the agony. Meanwhile, the joy of giving someone the perfect gift is unparalleled. We all know how it feels, hopping back and forth from foot to foot, wringing our hands, practically peeing in our pants, begging them to open it. Open it already! Jesus H. Christ, here, let me freaking do it. The power of giving is so strong that the excitement and the good feelings are often greater for the giver than for the receiver. Which is why, when you find your calling and you design your life in such a way that you can share your gifts with the world on a consistent basis, you feel like a rock star. When we share what we were brought here to give, we are in alignment with our highest, most powerful selves. Most people, however, wander through their lives giving the tasteful candle version of their gifts. You know, they don't show up to the party empty-handed or anything. They present their somewhat flaccid gift to the world, receive a warm hug and an, oh, you shouldn't have, in return, but they don't knock it out of the park. For example, they get a job doing something that they either hate or that's a bit of a yawn but is, you know, okay. It affords them a life that covers the basics as long as they don't go too crazy. They do fun stuff, but not as much as they'd like because they don't have the money, or the time, or the belief that they deserve to. They have little victories here and there. They meet their sales quota and win the 6-day cruise to the Bahamas, or rack up enough miles to go stay with their aunt and see the Olympics, or finally sit down and write an entire song that they may or may not ever record or perform. But they never truly go for it and create a life that really lights them up. They basically big snooze their lives away. Every single person is born with unique and valuable gifts to share with the world. Once we figure out what ours are and decide to live our lives putting them to use, that's when, and only when, the real party begins. Living a life on purpose is available to everyone. So if you're struggling or settling or completely confused about what you're supposed to do with your life, know that the answer is already here. It exists, and so does a life you can't wait to create. You just need to get some clarity first. There are entire books written on finding your calling, some of the best of which I share in the resources section on my website, www.jensincero.com. But the following are a few of my favorite tips. Keep in mind there's no right way to go about this. Everyone's journey is unique, but we're all trying to get to the same place, the place where we feel happiest, the most alive, and the most like ourselves. Even if you've nailed the perfect career for yourself, listen on because these tips can help you in all areas of your life. How to get clear on who you are and what your calling is. 1. Be the alien. Imagine that you're an alien floating around in outer space, and you suddenly swoop down to Earth and inhabit your own body. As the alien, everything about this life is new to you. You look around. What do you see? What is this person who you've inhabited so obviously awesome at? What do they have the most fun doing? What connections do they have? What resources and opportunities are available to them? As the alien, to whom everything is new and exciting and there's nothing at risk and no past to lug around, what are you going to do with this incredible new life you've stepped into? How are you going to use this new body and this existence to create something fabulous and awesome starting right now? This exercise is hugely helpful for getting a new perspective and stepping outside our boring-ass ruts of tired old excuses and lame habits. It can also be very useful in making you aware of all the staggering possibilities and resources that you have at your fingertips and take for granted or do not see. Sometimes it's as simple as looking at things with new eyes to see how astoundingly fortunate we are. Be the alien for 24 hours and see what you come up with. 2. Take the first right step. Instead of wasting hours and days and years trying to figure out your perfect next move, just do something already. Oh, the time we waste rolling ideas around in our heads, imagining what-ifs, coming up with the perfect reasons why and then the perfect reasons why not, tearing at our cuticles, making our friends and family carefully screen their calls in case it's us again, wanting to go over some ideas. Get out of your head and take action. You don't have to know exactly where it's going to take you. You just need to start with one thing that feels right and keep following right-feeling things and see where they lead. most answers reveal themselves through doing, not thinking. When I discovered my calling as a coach, I was, ironically, in the midst of a lifelong obsession with figuring out what the hell my purpose was. While I always knew writing was part of it, I also knew I wasn't meant to spend my life locked away in a silent room, alone and half-crazed, wrestling words into submission. I wanted something that A, involved interacting with other people, B, helped people in some sort of direct way, C, was really fun, and D, forced me to bathe, dress, and leave my house. That's about all I had to go on, that and my intense desire to figure it out. So when a friend told me I should check out a women's entrepreneurial think tank group that had just started up, I figured I'd go. We were all supposed to bring a project to work on, but I had nothing, just the hope that I'd get some ideas from something someone else brought to the table. After sitting there for 4 weeks watching this room full of women figure out what they love to do and turn their brilliant ideas into businesses or grow the businesses they already had, I still had no project of my own, but I did know what I wanted to do. I went up and asked the facilitator if she needed any help, which she did. She hired me, and I started leading these groups, which, after a few years, led to me starting my own coaching practice, which led to me working with clients all over the world, which led to me sitting in the studio recording this book. No matter how clueless you may feel right now, pay attention to suggestions and opportunities that suddenly present themselves, and notice how you feel. Is there something for you that, for whatever reason, feels like it might be good to check out? What have you been saying forever that you'd love to do? Has somebody mentioned a course or a teacher or a book that keeps sticking in your mind? Take the first step in the direction towards something that feels right and see where it leads you. And do it now. 3. Do your best wherever you're at. Once you take this first step, it's possible that you won't land in your dream situation right away. You might land on a stepping stone. It could be an awesome stepping stone, or it can be kind of an unawesome stepping stone. But no matter where your first step lands you, if you want to keep moving forward, appreciate wherever you're at instead of feeling ashamed or grouchy or impatient about it. Everything you do along your journey contributes to where you're going. Let's say you've decided that you're going to go after your fantasy of being a rock star, and you take a job waiting tables so you have the flexibility to travel and play gigs and go into the studio. Clearly, your calling is playing music, not being concerned that some whiny customer's French onion soup is allegedly too cold, but it's essential that you care anyway. Having a good attitude and being grateful for all the things that are helping you live the life of your dreams will not only make your life a more pleasant place to be and get you bigger tips, but it will also raise your frequency and attract the people and opportunities to you that will take you in the direction you want to go. This is where being really present in the moment comes in handy. Granted, you may not be on stage in front of thousands doing a split in the air, but remember that you are going for it. You are bravely moving towards your dream. You are surrounded by unthinkable miracles and opportunities. Lean back, relax, and be grateful that you're living on purpose, that you're hanging out in the high frequency, and that everything you need is zooming towards you. 4. Don't reinvent the wheel. Look around and see what other people are out there doing. Whose life makes you totally jealous? What things are people doing that you would love to do too? Who do you think is the coolest person ever? You don't need to invent your ideal life from scratch. You just need to figure out what makes you feel alive. So if what someone else is doing sparks your interest, take notice. It could mean that your calling has something in common with theirs. Get specific about the things in their lives that turn you on. Is it the fact that they get to travel the world? Or that they have a solid routine? Or that they have no routine? Is it that they work alone? That they work in the nude? That they get to be outside all day? That they work with their hands, their eyes, their ears, their animals, their spouse? The more specific you get, the easier it'll be to create a picture of what you want. Read magazines that interest you. Talk to as many people as you can. Hang out in places where people who share your interests hang out. Put yourself out there and you never know what you might learn that will inform you of your next move or whom you might meet who will present you with your next opportunity. 5. Don't get caught up in the Thunderbolt hype. I think one of the most paralyzing misconceptions is that we're all supposed to have one true calling that comes to us in a mighty flash of soul-defining insight. While there are those people who've always known exactly what they want to do, there are a hell of a lot more of us out there who spend most of our lives, if not all of our lives, wandering around looking under rocks and behind trees for who we are. Let yourself off the hook if you don't have that one big, perfect thing that you know you came here to do. Same goes for finding the one big, perfect soulmate, by the way. And feel good about the fact that you'll probably fulfill several callings throughout your life, and possibly relationships. If you think about it, it makes much more sense to evolve as you age anyway. When I think about who I was in my 20s compared to who I am now, I can't imagine anything more unappealing than going after some of the things that resonated with me back then. Follow what feels good in the moment, every moment, and it will lead you through a most excellent life. 6. Listen to your intuition. If you really want to get in touch with who you are and what you love to do, and who you love to do it with, dedicate some time to tuning into your intuition. One of the best ways to do this is to spend 5 minutes of quiet by yourself every day. We spend the vast majority of our time moving at full speed ahead, both physically and mentally, and we literally bulldoze over the very answers we're seeking because they can't be heard above the din. When you sit quietly and ask, you get an answer. Eventually. Stick with it, be patient, and wait to hear from your inner guidance. You have all the answers you need, you just need to give them the chance to get through to you. 7. Follow your fantasies. Now that I've given you all the kinder, gentler ways to figure yourself out, I'm going to suggest something you're probably not going to like so much. Jump into the deep end and follow your fantasies. What do you fantasize about when you're staring out the window of a train, or before you go to sleep at night, or when you're pretending to listen to someone really boring talk your ear off? Are you on stage doing stand-up comedy in front of thousands of hysterical fans? Are you surrounded by your beautiful children in the coziest, happiest home ever? Are you being celebrated for building orphanages around the world? Do this exercise as if money weren't an issue. Tap into what brings you great joy instead of what you think you need to do to survive. If you had an unlimited supply of cash, what would you spend your life doing? Our fantasies are the most revealing peepholes into who we are and what we think is awesome. No matter how out there and ridiculous they may seem, they mean something to us, and usually represent our biggest and best versions of ourselves. Our fantasies are our realities in an excuse-free world. Meanwhile, we'd all be mortified if anyone could read our minds and catch us in the act. I know, it's totally stupid, I want to sing on Broadway. Well, is it really stupid? Someone's out there doing it, so why couldn't you? Much of the time, we pretend we aren't clear on what our calling is when what's really going on is that we're horrified to face it because it seems too big or too impossible to make a living at or completely out of the question for us. But what if you had the audacity to leave your excuses and your shame about wanting to be huge and fabulous behind and really went for it full on anyway? What if you decided to do the most outrageous, most exciting thing you ever dared fantasize about, regardless of what anyone, including your terrified self, thought? That would be living. 8. Love yourself like you're the only you there is. Chapter 9. Loincloth Man. It's better to be hated for what you are than to be loved for what you are not. André Gide, French author, Nobel Prize winner, fearless self-explorer. Every May, I go backpacking through the desert wilderness areas of southeast Utah with two longtime friends of mine. It's one of the most magnificent and bizarre places I've ever been. Giant, jagged, obscenely pink ridges of rock jut out of the ground like huge slabs of raw meat. White, yellow, and purple towers of sandstone stretch and twist into sculptures made of taffy. Deep cracks in the earth's surface form cathedral-like slot canyons, whose walls, smoothed over from flash floods and sandstorms, change colors from moment to moment as the sun's rays shift through the narrow opening high above. It's like the moon, only cooler. We merrily trip through this alternate universe, picking up colorful rocks, climbing around on boulders, and arguing over which eagle or snake or mountain goat should be awarded Creature of the Day. Because my friends are such excellent navigators, we go deep into the wilderness areas, where there are no trails and even fewer people. In the 16 years we've been hiking out there, we could practically count the people we've bumped into while backpacking on one hand. Which was why I was so surprised and dubious when my friend Tom, who'd gone ahead to find us a place to set up camp for the night, reported that he'd seen someone. I just met this really wild guy, he said when I caught up with him. He was wearing nothing but a loincloth and a headband. He was holding a spear, too. Said he'd been living in the canyon for 13 years.
Was he riding a magic dragon?
I'm serious. So where is he? He went off to check his squirrel trap, but he could come back.
Mm-hmm.
Tom is a lousy liar, and wherever he was taking this joke, he wasn't getting to the punchline fast enough. So I put down my pack and started assembling my tent, only half listening to him. A few minutes into it, as I was bending over to hammer in one of my stakes, I looked through my legs and saw a pair of tanned feet in homemade sandals, strong, naked legs, and a dead squirrel dangling by its tail from a fist. I stood up, spun around, and there he was, Loincloth Man. What Tom didn't mention was that Loincloth Man was totally hot. He was somewhere in his late 30s, had a ripped, lean, savagely tanned bod, and shaggy brown hair with a matching beard. He fit the part perfectly. Modern-day Tarzan, slayer of buffalo and ladies alike. Which, stunning as he was, instantly made him a little bit suspect in my mind. That and the fact that his loincloth was impeccably tailored and appeared to be made out of soft Italian leather, not some ratty canyon rabbit. Would you mind handing that to me so I can have a closer look at it, please? His whole deal was just a little too cliché. Couldn't he have just worn shorts? And was he really going to eat that squirrel? Still, we gathered around him like a baby pig at the state fair, awestruck by our luck. This time, there was no argument. We had clearly found our creature of the day. He was real friendly and answered all of our questions at a slow, deliberate pace, explaining that this and several of the neighboring canyon systems were where he made his home. He told us very matter-of-factly that he found modern society unnecessarily complicated and misguided, so much so that he preferred to live on only what nature provided him, storing his grain in the winter and sleeping in a cave. The thing that struck me more than the fact that he cut his hair with a sharp rock and probably wasn't wearing any undies was that he was totally unapologetic. There we all were, shifting around, feeling suddenly ridiculous in our expensive hiking boots and UV protective clothing, while he described how it took him weeks to whittle the bow and arrow he used to kill the deer whose hides now serve as his bedspread. Good for him, I thought, as I watched him walk away, swinging his squirrel like a purse. He wasn't worrying about what he should be doing or what he was missing out on or what some chick from L.A. thought of his fancy crotch pelt. He was just happy being true to himself, in the moment, in the middle of nowhere. I want to be like Loincloth Man. Love yourself, no matter who you really are. Part 3. How to Tap into the Motherlode. Chapter 10. Meditation 101. You are never alone or helpless. The force that guides the stars guides you too. Sri Sri Annadamurti, Indian philosopher, social revolutionary, author, composer. Meditation, otherwise known as sitting still and thinking about nothing, is one of those things that can be just as stupidly simple as it is surprisingly hard. It reminds me of those contests where a bunch of people stand around a brand new car or truck, and whoever leaves their hands on it the longest gets to take it home. The winner winds up on the front page of her local paper, victorious and sleepy, smiling from behind the wheel of her newly won ride with a thumbs up for the camera. Tarrytown's very own Jill Boonder was the proud winner of the 2012 Chevy Standoff, held in Green Bay, Wisconsin this past weekend. Jill beat out 68 other contestants from around the country by standing for 173 hours and 9 minutes in the Home Depot parking lot with her hands placed with unyielding determination on the hood of what would soon be her new Chevy Silverado. "I'm so excited I won," she said. "There was some stiff competition, some folks who I thought would never back down, but I really brought my A-game." With meditation, the simplicity is equally misleading. That's all I have to do to connect with source energy? Sit there and do nothing? It can't be that easy. Well, it is. And it's not. Which is why it's called a meditation practice. When you shut up and meditate for even 5 minutes and start to really notice the thoughts that are swirling around in your brain, it's rather illuminating. If you're like most people, the majority of your thoughts are about as valuable and interesting as a bunch of 2-year-olds fighting over a sippy cup. The goal is to quiet your mind of the chatter so you can connect to source energy and listen to your inner guidance. I'm going to give you the breakdown on how to meditate, but first I want to recommend that you start small and work your way up. Try meditating for 5 to 10 minutes each day at first and add on time as you get less squirmy. There's no right way or wrong way to do this. No set amount of time, no correct things to feel, no rules about how you have to sit or where you have to do it. All that matters is that you do it if you want to massively improve your life. It's like drinking lots of water or exercising regularly or not bad-mouthing other people. You don't have to do it, and the temptation to blow it off is extremely large. But if you make a habit of it, not only will you start to crave it, but your entire life will change. Because when we meditate, we practice getting into the vortex and connecting to source energy, which automatically brings us into the present moment, raises our frequency, opens us up to receive unlimited information and ideas, relaxes us, relieves stress, strengthens our intuition and ability to focus, allows us to hear our inner voice more clearly, fills us with light and love, puts us in a good mood, helps us love ourselves. Meditating and being in the vortex is like riding the airstream of awesomeness. Here are the extremely short and simple steps of some different ways to meditate. Basic meditation. Sit in a comfortable cross-legged position on the floor or in a chair with your hands on your knees or in your lap. Sit up straight and relax your entire face, especially your jaw and your forehead. Close your eyes, or if it helps you focus and not fall asleep, keep them open and gaze softly at a spot on the ground a couple feet in front of you. Focus on your breathing. Notice it moving in and out of your body. You don't have to breathe in any special way, just focus on it. Gently release any thoughts that come into your brain and refocus on your breathing. Keep your mind as clear and empty as possible and listen for intuitive hits that may or may not come through. Ta-da! That's it. Options and suggestions. 1. Set a timer. You've got enough distracting thoughts without checking the clock to see how long you've been at it every 30 seconds. 2. Light a candle and focus on it. Sometimes having a place to rest your eyes can help you get centered and in the zone. Sit and face a candle that you place on the floor in front of you while you meditate and see if that works for you. 3. Imagine a bright beam of light shooting down from the sky, shining in through the top of your head, running through your entire body, out your bottom, and up to the sky again, so that it makes a complete circle. I sometimes find this easier to focus on than the ever-popular breath method. Plus, it fills me up with energy and light and makes me feel more deeply connected to source energy. 4. Use a mantra. Sometimes when the squirrels in my head are particularly active, I bring in a mantra to chase them out. I repeat a word or a phrase in my mind like love or thank you or yes please or om. Something that makes me feel good and is fairly neutral. But you could use a mantra like meatloaf, I guess, if that's your thing. 5. Try and meditate first thing in the morning so you're not distracted by whatever the day brings. Your conscious mind will also be more quiet, having just woken up from sleeping. 6. If there's something in your life that you're working on or through, you can set an intention or ask for help during your meditation practice. Meditating is about receiving information from the universe. Setting intentions and praying are about sending information out to the universe. There are 2 ways you can do this. A. Start with a question, something like, how do I deal with my pain-in-the-ass teenage son? And see what, if any, answers download while you meditate. Or B. Meditate first, open up the channel, clear out the chatter, and then ask your question in a space of clarity and connection and see what, if anything, comes to you. Guided meditation. There are countless CDs and DVDs that various hippies and guru types have made over the years to walk you through meditations. I suggest taking the guided route when you're first starting out if you're having trouble wrangling your mind into submission. They make great training wheels, and I still use them occasionally, especially if I want to focus on something specific. There are also guided meditation centers all over the place, and it's really nice every once in a while to meditate in a group. You can really feed off that energy and get the discipline to sit there for an extended period of time. Do a search for meditation centers and ashrams in your area. Sometimes yoga studios hold guided meditations too. Chanting. Chanting is also a great way to get into a meditative state. You can repeat a mantra over and over out loud on your own, or if you prefer to avoid getting busted and very possibly ridiculed, you can do it in a group by attending a kirtan meditation class. Kirtan meditation involves call and response chanting of Sanskrit mantras or devotional songs, and you can attend classes at a yoga studio or a meditation center. Also check out transcendental meditation instruction, a form that involves repeating mantras and sitting twice a day for around 20 minutes at a time. I've had some pretty profound experiences while meditating. I've seen the walls melt around me, felt like I was levitating, and have experienced such a state of euphoria that it almost hurt. I've also had extremely unprofound experiences. I've fallen asleep, spent the entire time squirming and thinking about what to make for lunch, and have been totally in the zone, and then realized I was in the zone, and thought, awesome, I'm in the zone, thereby pulling myself out of the zone. The important thing is that you keep showing up. Even if you're only in the zone for one collective minute out of the 30 minutes you've been sitting there, it will eventually start making a notable difference in your life. I think meditation is even more essential now that we have all this technology at our fingertips and distraction has become a way of life. While I truly believe that we, as a species, are becoming more and more conscious, I'm amazed by how, at the same time, our attention spans are rapidly shrinking. I was playing tennis the other day with someone who got a text, pulled out his phone, and checked it in the middle of a point. It's astonishing that we can still speak in full sentences. Aside from being one of the most powerful tools in our consciousness-raising toolbox, meditation is a much-needed respite from the madness and will help us from becoming a bunch of scatterbrained ding-dongs as we zoom around our brave and extremely exciting new world. Chapter 11. Your brain is your bitch. Mind is the master power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and evermore he takes. The tool of thought, and shaping what he wills, brings forth a thousand joys, a thousand ills. He thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass. James Allen, old-timey author, self-help pontificator. How often do you stop and notice how genius our universe is? With all its moving parts and mathematical perfection and chemical reactions and food chains and gravity and all the magnificent efficiency and complexity that makes it up? This display of astonishing brilliance didn't just splat down into beingness by random, dumb luck. It was thought up. Nature is a smoothly running machine, created by a universal intelligence.